Welcome to Music Mastery Academy, where we talk about all things music.
From practicing and support for parents, to theory and music history, to navigating the ups and downs of the dynamic world of music.
We hope that these conversations are an encouragement to you as you navigate your own journey.
All right, so welcome to our first episode here. Music Mastery Academy, parent discussions, discussions about music education and all the ways that we wish it was and know that it can be. I'm selling fluff. There's this kind of speaking called, I don't know, it's like very distinct and clear gibberish, and it's called something speak. It's like a language. I don't know. Anyway,
right.
We should come up with some of that. Okay. So today we're going to, I guess I'm Amber.
I'm Jen.
Yep. We love to talk about music theory. We love to talk about teaching. We love to share our experiences as parents and teachers about the ins and outs and the ups and downs and the challenges of making this all work, because it is an investment.
That's right.
Music is an investment. It is investing a lot of time and energy, and it really, there's so many ways to make it better, I think.
Right. So Amber, before we get started into the topic that we want to talk about today, why don't we introduce ourselves?
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Why don't you go first?
Okay.
Thanks for volunteering.
Thanks. So I'm Jen. I am a pianist. I'm a trained concert pianist. I went to school for it. I have 3 kids who all play instruments. So I am a piano teacher. I'm a practice mom. And this is something that I'm super passionate about. Music study. It's incredible.
I love it. I love it. And it's very contagious. And I love the way we met, Jennifer. Our kids were in a violin studio together, and we were just able to connect with our kids doing music together and exchange stories and ideas. And eventually, we switched children to practice.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's like this community that we have, parents supporting each other, parents who are aligned with the same values.
Right.
I think it's very good. So my name's Amber, Amber Seeley. I am a flutist. I have my bachelor's and master's in flute performance, and I had aspirations to be a orchestral flutist, and that didn't pan out. I found a more exciting outlet for my musical passion and pursuits, I suppose. Teaching is so much more exciting, I think, when you've gone through it as a teacher for a while, but also as a parent, because you're suddenly in the eyes of a student once again. But with a mature understanding of what you have, this benefit of being able to say, if I could go back, this is what I do. I do it right this time, you know, like
right.
Picking up things that you might have overlooked when you're going through it yourself. You can kind of see a bigger picture as a parent, which is super cool. I love teaching. I teach flute students in person and online. And I have so much experience from this culture of music in Texas and the types of music environment there. There's marching band, football was a huge thing. And there was, TMEA, all region, all state. It was just such a fun culture. It was such a fun outlet for someone who is really energetic. I have a lot of energy and I get antsy if there's not like a project or goal or something. So it's really fun for me to, it feels more fulfilling to be able to give back in some way now. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't think I could really do that when I was younger, but it's nice to be there now. So, I really love how we are both, I have 3 children as well who are all playing musical instruments, and I have a violinist and then 2 pianists, boys who are, my children are very unique and different in how they learn. And that's been quite a challenge and eye-opening experience to explore how to teach better. I think my kids teach me how to teach better. One of the things that you and I have talked about, Jennifer, is how to teach, how to kind of isolate certain musical principles. And the one we wanted to start out with was talking about rhythm. That's one of the biggest problems that I see in my students with their confidence. Their confidence is more aligned with other things usually than rhythm for whatever reason. And that was an interesting topic, I think, that we were discussing and wanting to talk about this on a platform. So
yeah, and the other thing about rhythm that I think is really, you know, it's the foundation of everything we do as musicians. And it's right. Common to all of us. You know, every instrument has its unique challenges, but rhythm is something we all have to deal with.
That's true.
It's the beast we all have to
it's
deal
the
with.
Beast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it's multi, subject. Like it's not just in music, but in dance, I think it's huge.
Right.
Or in a lot of things, I think it's a psychological benefit to have a sense of time and sound and space, sound and time, I guess, sound and time, sound, right. Time and space, I guess. I think there's some alignment there that when it makes sense, it just kind of feels like something has clicked. It's like, right. Aha, you know, arrival. It's very satisfying to understand time and space and meter, time and sound, I guess. Rhythm. What would you call rhythm? What is rhythm? How would you define it? It's kind of like an abstract term. What is rhythm?
Well, it is musical time. It's musical the way time. We divide musical time. It's yes. The way we feel organized. Musical time. It's the way we organize it.
Yeah. Organized chaos. Otherwise. Yeah. Organized right. Sound. And if without it, it's.
Well, and that's what enables us as musicians to collaborate.
That's true.
You know, it's what, I mean, it gives us a lot of, you know, it's our, I don't know if you want to call it the equalizer, but it's the thing that we all have to be able to do it if we're going to work with somebody else.
That's true.
And as a pianist, you know, one of the skills that we have to teach young piano students is how to collaborate with other musicians.
That's
and
true.
Obviously, other instruments that are playing an orchestra or chamber music or anything, you have to understand rhythm in order to play with other people.
Right. That's so true. It is like unto language in the sense language is to social experiences as humans as rhythm is to music. So in the same way that language connects us with other people, rhythm connects musicians together.
That's right.
I like that. That's interesting. Yeah.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
See, this live conversation is way better than what we could have written, right? All right. So I'll start with some questions that I have for you. If you could go back to when you were, we talked about going back as a parent, you know, but if you could go back in time, knowing what you know now and still holding what you know now, going back to your experiences, learning music for the first time as a child, what would you do differently or what would you change and why?
So my journey to becoming a musician was a little bit atypical. I was given the opportunity to take piano lessons as a very young child. My mom told me that I started lessons in kindergarten. So I was probably 5 or 6 years old, but I didn't take lessons for very long, probably only 6 months to a year. And at that point, my mother, who had taken piano lessons her entire childhood, was like, well, I can probably teach you well enough on my own. And the way my mom taught me piano lessons was I was incredibly self-motivated. I really wanted to learn. And so she handed me a book. Usually they were her old books that she had learned out of as a child, which was fun. And I went through and I kind of taught myself the piece. And then every once in a while, my mom would check in. And sometimes I would have a question and I would talk to her about things. But for the most part, I kind of was self-taught. I kind of taught myself how to play, which,
that's,
you know,
incredible.
For a long time. I didn't take formal lessons until I was in 5th or 6th grade. So it was a very long amount of time. And I love the piano. I would practice, you know, independently on my own. My mom wasn't having to ask me to do anything. But one of the problems that I ran into at a very young age, I remember I was probably 7, very young, and I heard somebody play the piano. And obviously they were a musician or a person that I had admired a lot, and they played beautifully, but with a lot of rubato. And if you don't know what rubato is, yeah. Rubato is a dangerous thing.
It is. It's messing up on purpose.
That's right. So, and you know, pieces can call for rubato. Rubato, I like to tell my students that it's kind of like you're pulling taffy. It's like, yeah, you stretch the rhythm a little bit. You, right, can stretch the length or the beats. You can make it a little bit longer or a little bit shorter to be expressive. And some composers, it's can be very tastefully done,
right?
You know, and in some situations it's too much. And yeah. I can't remember as a 7-year-old, you know, how much rubato this person was playing with. But now I know as an adult, that's what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And me, I was like, oh my goodness, that's so cool. Look at how they're playing with the rhythm, you know, with the way that the music feels. And so I tried to emulate that in my own practice at home. And all of a sudden, what started to happen is, you know, if you let rubato go unchecked, you,
right,
stop being able to feel the beat.
Interesting.
And that's exactly what happened to me. And so when I started formal piano lessons, I went to a piano teacher who just lived down the road from me. She was wonderful. And she tried so hard to get me to play with the metronome. And I said no. I was pretty stubborn and strong-willed. I was like, I've taught myself until this point. I feel like I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I don't need to add that metronome. So oh, I was probably a very trying student. So she was very kind and gracious and did her best with me. Mm-hmm. And I made quite a bit of progress, but I had no ability to sense the beat. I had lost that through my years of being self-taught. And I remember once in seventh grade, I was in a choir class and we were given this assignment to compose a piece as a group and to pick instruments. There were like rhythm instruments and some people were singing. It was like a small group of four people. And I obviously was like, well, I'll play the piano. And we composed this lovely piece, but there we were as this like group of musicians and we couldn't get it to come together. And the teacher came over and he was like, well, you're not playing in time. And I was like, yes, I am. I'm not the problem here. And, you know, I had no idea because to me it sounded right. And he would turn on a metronome and I couldn't play with it. I couldn't do it. And our group didn't ever really come together because right. I was the weak link. I was the weak link that didn't understand how to fill the beat appropriately. And finally, when I was in eighth grade, I had a university professor that accepted me as a student. And the first thing she did was make me learn how to play with the metronome. And I remember it was months. And she would have her college students come and work with me. And my sweet older brother tried to work with me and I just yelled at him. And there were a lot of tears and a lot of crying. And she had assigned me a Mozart sonata and Mozart has to be played with the metronome. Yes. You have to feel the beat. That like classical style really needs that organization. And I finally learned how to do it. But even now to this day, it's the thing that I feel the most uncomfortable with in music, which, you know, as a pianist, when I'm supposed to collaborate with other people, I always have to like, I feel like I have to double and triple check to make sure I'm not making errors in my rhythm because there was so much of my childhood where I wasn't doing it right and I didn't understand
wild,
that.
Wild, wild west.
So with my students, I have them playing with the metronome from day one because I would hate for anybody to ever be in that situation where they can't feel the beat. So.
Right. You know, it's interesting when you say that because I mean, you think of someone in the realm of dancers, you know, and how they organize their choreography. It seems pretty intuitive. However, how much and why does my dance teacher or exercise teacher always start with 5, 6, 7, 8, 1? Like what is that, you know,
right.
In terms of not really articulating these ideas behind rhythm, why it's starting there. What is it? I mean, technically a pickup, but what is a pickup? No one's talking about, hey, this is a pickup, you know, in an exercise class. So I think it's just a lot of it is kind of left to intuition when it I don't believe it should be, you know, in terms of like how you teach a child to speak. You want to have good examples and you want to, you know, utilize grammar and kind of explain the rules by context as much as possible from the very beginning. So that's interesting, your story. I with my background in marching band, it was kind of ingrained in externalizing the beat. You know, I didn't start my serious musical studies till I was 12. I did piano lessons at 8 and I had a teacher that did metronome work with me. And I just wasn't very serious of a student until I found the flute age 12 in the middle school band. And, you're always funneled into the marching band. You're like at all the football games and you have to learn to march with the beat. And that was kind of how I externalized the beat. But I will say that sight reading has always been a huge strength of mine because of that. And I don't know how I would have been as a pianist if I took it more seriously, but it was something that, I don't know. With that, it really did become a strength. I have other, you know, weaknesses, certain weaknesses, but that is something that it really did yield some benefit. I think too, just understanding the need to separate it in practice is something that came to me later though.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think that's important.
Well, and I'm sure in marching band, that's such an interesting thing that I don't know why I've never thought of it until now. This idea of being able to physically move your body along with the beat to the music,
yes,
like
yes.
How valuable that would be.
It is valuable. And
right.
Then it was a really good training. I had an opportunity to conduct a lot with drum majoring study. I mean, a lot of my nurturing was through a marching band setting. So I was really grateful for that. Not something I would probably go back and be excited about doing again. But I mean, it just proved to be so valuable.
Right.
So, but you know, it's interesting because I think the way that we approach a new piece of repertoire, the way we see musical study, it seems like many people have this goal to start a new piece of music with their teacher. They're so excited to learn this piece of repertoire that they've heard before other performers or a pop song that they've heard on the radio. And like pop is one of those things that I absolutely think is very difficult to play and dissect the rhythm if you're not doing it by your ear.
Absolutely.
Every pop song that has ever been played on any instrument or voice is typically learned by repeating back or oral tradition rather. If I were to take a pop song that I've never heard before and to look at the music and how it's rhythmically notated, it'd be very difficult for me to figure out. So,
well, and jazz is the same way. Yes. Like if you've ever tried to play a jazz transcription, it's like, you better go and listen to it first.
Yes.
Because they're doing their best to notate something
that just exists more
really. Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the fears of being so obsessive about studying rhythmic notation literally is that you become so robotic with it. But like you were saying with rubato, you have to know the literal notation and be confident with that first before you can take liberties. Unless the creation of the music itself is improvised, which is a whole nother idea.
Right.
If you are learning something as a secondhand, you know, if someone else composed something or if you're learning, you know, how to take liberties, you can't take the liberties before you learn the skeleton. It's like putting a roof on a house without laying the foundation in the walls, the frame.
Right.
So you're framing your music by studying rhythm first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as far as sight reading, and you mentioned sight reading, how you feel like that rhythmic training gave you this ability to become a great sight reader. Right. I remember in my university coursework, one of our keyboard skills classes, we had to sight read a slow movement. It was usually a slow movement of a Haydn sonata every single class.
Which
are so, I mean, if you've ever looked at slow movements of Haydn sonatas for piano, I mean, it's like how many 32nd notes and 64th 100%. Notes and dotted, you know, it's just, it's
very
ridiculous. The notation is horrible.
Yes.
No metronome on. So you're having to keep the beat in yourself, you know, in your body, you have to feel it yourself. But if you dropped a beat, or held a beat too long, you automatically failed.
That's true.
And you're automatically failed.
Not three strikes. You're out on the first strike. Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea behind that, which feels so strict and so horrible, but also the idea behind that is the counting is so much more important than the notes.
Right.
And if you're 100%. Thrown together in a situation where you're having to sight read as an ensemble, the second you hesitate, you're off.
Yep. Yep,
so you have to.
It doesn't matter if you're playing the right notes. Exactly. They will sound wrong because they're at the wrong time.
That's right. So this idea of becoming so confident with our rhythm is so incredibly important. And that's one of the reasons that we're focusing on rhythm so much in our Music Mastery Academy is because it's such an essential skill for all musicians.
It is. And one of the questions I had when we were thinking about this is why is it not prioritized, or why is it so difficult for a private teacher to spend time on that as a separate skill? And I think it's just, it takes an immense amount of time and attention. It's a needy beast. It just needs that attention as separate. But the problem is, I think it's easy to get bored when you're studying it with the level of repetition that you need. And so it's not as exciting for students to do. So the interest and engagement might not be there. Also, I think to study any instrumental study, you have a lot more going on than just the rhythm. You have the actual instrument mechanics. You have your hand position. You have your posture. You have your breath control or your bow or whatever else is going on. The piano, you have pedals and you have all these other things. The notes by themselves, you've got so many different things going on at the same time. So there's so much to understand and let alone dynamics and the kind of fun stuff with the phrasing, the rubato, the liberties that people really want to get to. You want your student to feel like they are succeeding, that they are successful. You also want it to be not a very tedious, dull experience for them. However, I do believe that it makes it more exciting whenever you are excited as a teacher about rhythm, about rhythmic study. So I like how you brought up the slow movements with my students. I love to, when they're introduced to a new genre of classical music, especially, I do put them on a slow movement on purpose. And we talk about meter. We talk about divisions of the beat, and I actually have them visualize it by drawing these bars above where the beat should be, and they are not allowed to do anything besides that until we graduate, that like separate into levels. Once they can just analyze where the beats are supposed to go and play it, I have them play it on just one note, no changing any notes at all, and then moving with the notes and then just getting the notes in rhythm solid, then you can start adding your ornaments onto that Christmas tree. You don't want to
Right.
And actually have a trunk and branches before you had the ornaments.
Absolutely. Rhythm is our foundation.
Yes.
Like, and it is so difficult. You know, I mean, I teach many, many private students, and I've taught many, many private students over the years, and convincing them that they need to spend the time is the hardest thing.
It really is.
Because to them, I mean, especially if you have students who are very strong ear players.
Yes.
They want to feel it and, you know, they want to hear it and they want to improvise it, but they don't want to understand it.
No.
With that, you know, is it the right side of the brain that's the intellectual
yes,
side?
Yes, I don't know. Yeah.
The right side of the brain.
Yes.
They don't want to sit there and take that time to say, okay, how does this actually work,
right?
You know, so yeah, that is exactly what we're trying to do here, is to give teachers and students a place where you can feel like you can learn these skills and practice these skills and get better at this part of your musical study.
And if teachers are able to have the resources, the time, the supports to educate their students, to spend that adequate amount of time where the student is excited about it, where it's engaging and fun, and they feel successful with those, what did you call it a while ago? I think you said a quick dopamine reward or something, like a quick feedback prize,
right,
or something.
Right.
Ka-ching, you know, yay, I did it. Then they become better sight readers, which means they can learn more repertoire at a faster pace. They can feel successful more often. They are more likely to enjoy a collaborative experience with other musicians. I think it's the same reason why I think people feel like they are really attracted to math. You know, it's the same kind of satisfying feeling of getting it right instead of just like, oh, that was more blue. I don't know.
Right.
Which is a different kind of appreciation for sure. So last question I'd like to end with is thinking about, what is the biggest pain point with teaching or learning rhythm that you think, what about it is so tedious?
I think part of it, I mean, I think every student is different. And for some students, like for you know, one of my children, they can understand the math really easily. Like they understand, they can look at a note and say, that gets 1.5 beats. And they get that. But then when they have to actually apply it, the applied knowledge, that's where things get really difficult.
That's right, yes.
So there's a big difference between understanding, like looking at a note and saying, okay, I understand.
I don't need to practice that.
Right, exactly. And then actually being able to practically apply that, because we're changing tempos, we're changing time signatures, we're changing the way that beat is felt, like that note is felt. If we're in 6/8 time, a dotted quarter feels completely different than it's in 3/4 time.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
And so understanding like all of those nuances, I think that's where a lot of students get caught up.
They do. Yeah. Agreed. And I think that putting it together, understanding the need to practice something that you intellectually understand, but to take it to a deeper level of visceral understanding, then the need to spend time on it, kind of like you would a second language, just spending time listening to the language. And like, I've already heard Spanish before. I don't need to listen. You know, I don't need to spend time on it. This idea that you're never done, you never mastered it, that you always have to continually immerse yourself with the surrounding of it, of the practice of it. And the practicing can be fun. There's fun ways to do it. That's one thing I really love about our direction with Music Mastery Academy, is that the approach is to take something that's so fundamental and foundational and take away the chore nature of it and make it a game. And if it is a game, also communicate. Don't just play the game. Play the game every day. Play the game as part of who you are. Think about it and be able to withstand variations of it with immense confidence, just like you would of reading if you've mastered reading. So that's one thing I really love, and I'm so excited about this project.
Absolutely.
I
me too.
All right. Well, I hope that everybody got to think of some other ideas on how to make rhythmic education, rhythmic teaching, and rhythmic learning more enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.